Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second webinar focused on Donors Trust Growth and Resilience Project. I'm Lawson Bader. I'm the president of Donors Trust. You know, I'm pleased to have as our guests five individuals who represent the first five grantees from this program. Dan Rothschild from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, Aaron Ginn from the Lincoln Network, Rainer Hoifers from long far away in the Center for Indonesian Policy Studies, Andrew Moylan from the National Taxpayer Union Foundation, and Kent Lastman from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Just by way of reminder, Donors Trust established this project because we believe part of the response to the current COVID crisis is going to be found in policy, and specifically born on the shoulders of state and national and international groups that are best positioned to address that. Most importantly, we not only want to see pushback on sort of the government actions in the larger economic and social sphere, but we want scalable and practical solutions that enable people to return to their businesses, schools, airports, shopping malls in such a way that they can actually prosper. There are opportunities to remove barriers to entry that may not have been politically practical just 6 months ago. And we want to ensure that the overall regulatory environment is flexible enough not only to address some of the medical and health concerns that are immediate, but to generate even more innovation and experimentation, given the fact that several sectors of the economy are going to look very differently in the years ahead. But we also realize this is not uniquely an American problem, but a global one. So we are very glad to involve and include non-US organizations when we make potential grants out of this project. In addition to myself, the grants committee is comprised of Tracy Sharp of the State Policy Network, Adam Meyerson of the Philanthropy Roundtable, Brad Lips of the Atlas Network, and Kim Dennis, both of Donors Trust and the Cyril Freedom Trust. So we have broad perspectives on organizations that we feel are well positioned to succeed. Now, this past week, we've made five organizations that are featured today. We've made grants to them. We have another 18 organizations under consideration, and just in the last several days, 12 more have submitted proposals. So suffice it to say, there is a demand and a need for projects like the Growth and Resilience Program. And I'm going to say a bit more about that when we're done conversing with our guests. So with that, let me first turn to Dan Rothschild. So Dan, if you would just introduce the Mercatus Center and the project, let's hear about what you're trying to address, how it's scalable, and the kind of an impact that you hope to achieve.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Lawson, and thanks everyone for being here today. As Lawson said, I'm the executive director of the Mercatus Center. We're a university-based research center that seeks to advance and apply the ideas of free market economics. And as to all of you know, over the past few months, after the past couple of months, literally thousands, almost all K-12 schools, colleges, and universities have had to suddenly and abruptly, in many cases just over spring break, move to teaching online. And almost none of these educators have any experience in virtual teaching. So at the Mercatus Center, we saw this as an opportunity for Marginal Revolution University, our online free market economics education platform, to spring into action. Within the first couple of weeks, we created a library of resources for parents, high school teachers, and college professors who were, in the case of parents, teaching economics, and in the case of others, teaching online for the first time. We created a community from scratch of over 1,100 high school teachers and college and university instructors to help one another learn the best ways to teach economics. And we pushed forward new videos that are topical to this, like a new video that just came out on randomized control trials, something we'll be hearing a lot about. Traffic grew by more than 50% overnight, and every day we're hitting new records on videos. So thanks to Donors Trust, we've been able to blow this out just from a small community with a few ideas for how to teach effectively online, to really make this something that parents and teachers can use to teach economics, and specifically the kind of free market economics that we talk about at George Mason University. So Donors Trust support has enabled us to quickly create a whole host of discussion questions, readings, and quizzes so that parents who may not have degrees in economics themselves can see what their students are learning, test them on it, and actually have dinner table discussions around the ideas of markets. We've created a virtual lesson plan for our Globalization and You curriculum, which was one of our most popular offerings that explains globalization to high school students. And we've used the COVID crisis as an opportunity to put together special lesson plans and curate a series of videos on things like the use of prizes to incentivize vaccine creation and the importance of markets in responding to these kinds of crises. And it's working. I'd like to read a short testimonial from a New Jersey high school teacher named Andrea Serra, who said, "MRU has saved me hours of work during these unprecedented times. It has been my lifeline for teaching economics at a distance. With your material, I feel my students are able to grasp the concepts, even if they aren't able to be in the classroom. Thank you so much." Now, this is an opportunity for us not just to advance economics education in this important time, which it certainly is, but to scale dramatically at zero cost. By creating new lesson plans, by creating new curated suites of videos, we're able to tell people about economics, not just in the way that they might have learned it in high school or in college, which most of you probably did, and most of you were pretty much probably bored by, but to take economics as something that is really alive and show people how economic decisions are in fact having life and death consequences to people today. Because we're able to build all of these new relationships, again, with people who have never taught online before, we see the opportunity to grow an order of magnitude or more in the fall and beyond after the COVID crisis has passed. So we're excited about this opportunity to scale economics education online and to bring literally millions of more people in to understand the benefits of free markets in this perilous time.
Hi, everyone. My name is Aaron Jin, and I started an organization based out in Silicon Valley called Lincoln Network. And so we are the largest community of liberty-loving, center-right, libertarian technologists based in Silicon Valley. So I started it 7 years ago, and I have known Donors Trust and the crew for a number of years. And we fell into this, you could say, almost a little bit by accident. Some of it was intentional. I wrote an article that probably many of y'all have read called Evidence Over Hysteria that got 15 million views in 2 days and was also then removed from Medium. And then the Wall Street Journal then defended me sort of the following day, the editorial board. So out of that, we kind of got looped into this whole sort of COVID debate about, you know, what do we do? What does the science say? And where's the data going? And out of that, I got introduced to Stanford because they loved what I wrote. And then I started working with them on these sort of the results of everything from antibody testing to doing data analysis of fatalities and underlying conditions. From there, we actually have created a team at Lincoln that is devoted to not only assisting Stanford, but also helping popularize a lot of the evidence that is coming out of many universities about COVID-19 and the resulting impact. So through the support of Donors Trust and this fund, we've been actually able to popularize a lot of the new research that's coming out of Stanford. As an example, this week there was a professor of medicine that was on Tucker Carlson. That was an example of some of our work. Of not only connections that we have developed just from being a part of the Liberty space, been working in technology, we have been leveraging that as a means of getting out new research and new perspectives on COVID-19. As part of the project that was funded, there is a data service that we actually are providing many CEOs and politicians and influencers. That is essentially taking a lot of the research that's coming out of these institutions and condensing it down to a way that they can understand. So we have hundreds of people on this new email list that was just started like weeks ago, where essentially we're going through medical and scientific research and explaining what these different types of applications mean for not only on their business, but also on policy. We also have somehow also gotten to the antibody business. So I've also been helping physicians and universities attain antibodies to do surveillance testing as a means of gathering the true data on the infection and fatality rate. So thanks to Donors Trust, we've been able to continue this work and sort of be in the middle of this sort of epicenter of a massive amount of data and research is coming out. And making it real and effective to where people know what's actually going on with COVID-19.
Good evening. My name is Reiner Heufers. I'm saying good evening because I'm calling from Indonesia. We are the world's fourth largest country in the world, which a lot of people still don't know, so 270 million people. And the Center for Indonesian Policy Studies that I represent is a public policy think tank here, ranked among the five best think tanks in the country by the University of Pennsylvania. We are very much known in the country for our policy positions. Our papers are downloaded about 15,000 times in a year. We have about 100 media mentions every month, so we are very much engaged in discussions on free markets. We are having the slogan, the Indonesians need to be free to prosper. And our focus is to tell people how the free market principles actually help the poor. And we have a research focus on food security and agriculture, because the poor are particularly hurt by trade restrictions that make the food more expensive. So just this week, we had a webinar with 200 participants, 50 of which came from government agencies, where we discussed the rice supplies in Indonesia now during this crisis time. The crisis is really a threat to the poor. We are having estimates that in the best case scenario, with what's happening right now, 1 million Indonesians will be pushed below the poverty line. With worst case, it will be more than 8 million people pushed below the poverty line. So drastic consequences are happening, and this will be particularly leading to food insecurity. Now, with the funds that we are able to get from Donors Trust, we are starting a project which is called Keeping Markets Open. So we are looking at developments where countries now close their export markets. We have seen this in the world food price crisis in 2007 and 8, when leading exporters did just that and the food prices went up. You may remember the Egyptian spring and developments like these, riots and everything, because food prices went up. But there was enough food at the time, and the same happening now. We have enough food, but the prices go up because governments close their borders for exports in particular. So the funds that we are receiving, we want to invest into policy papers in which we analyze these export markets. I am a senior fellow with the Atlas Network, so I have good access to think tanks all over the world. I can ask them for their experiences, share their analysis. We will share ours. We are thinking globally, but we're acting locally. Our success that we are trying to achieve is that certain legislations that are currently debated in the national parliament will be passed for import liberalization in this country. We are preparing more policy papers. Once we're able to raise more funds, we will also focus on other commodities and not just food, because we want to reach domestic funders with this. Domestic businesses with this. We want to write about markets that are concerned to domestic businesses to win them as supporters. We're trying to leverage the funds from the Donors Trust to actually also win domestic support for our programs, in particular on trade liberalization. Thank you.
Good evening to Reiner, and good afternoon or good morning to everybody else. My name is Andrew Moylan. I'm the Executive Vice President of the National Taxpayers Union Foundation. And for those of you who aren't familiar with NTUF, we are a nonpartisan research and educational organization founded back in 1978. And our goal is to show Americans how taxes, government spending, and regulations affect them. Some of you may be familiar with our sister organization, the National Taxpayers Union, which was founded back in 1969. As the name might suggest to you, we take a particular interest in advancing sound tax policy that reduces the cost and complexity of our tax code. And unfortunately, we face a significant problem now in the face of the COVID-19 crisis. There is a real risk that federal, state, and local governments overreach in ways that harm taxpayers. And there are a couple of examples of this that we're focused on in this particular project. The first is that while ordinary tax filing deadline, which would have been yesterday, was delayed, there are additional delays that are needed to protect not just individual taxpayers, but businesses as well. One of those, thankfully, was just implemented recently, which is second quarter estimated payments. A lot of businesses that make estimated payments on a quarterly basis would have been required to do so rather soon, and those were delayed. But there are other deadlines as well that need to be extended along with that. So one example is flexible spending accounts for people that use those for commuting or childcare purposes, things like that. Well, naturally, there's not a lot of childcare and commuting expenses that people can use those FSA accounts for, but those are time-limited accounts that people will forfeit the balances of if Congress doesn't take action to extend it. And so that's one thing that we're focused on achieving. A second issue that I think is one that flies under the radar a bit, but is incredibly important, is there's this rapid expansion of telework where people who previously would work physically in an office are now working from home. And there is a real risk that that could lead businesses and individuals to being hit with new tax obligations simply for listening to public health advice to work from home in a safer environment. Many workers work in one state but live in another, and the tax situation for them is predicated on the notion of them working in this office. And so newly teleworking might mean that that business that didn't previously have a taxable presence in a state now does, with all the paperwork and financial burdens that that entails. And on the individual side, you have states like New York that are very aggressive in enforcing their state income taxes for people who travel to the state to work for even one day. And forthcoming budget challenges that states are likely to face is going to exacerbate this. And so what we are trying to do, and thanks to the Growth and Resilience Project, we're able to do this work, is we have a couple of big projects that we're focusing on where we're going to be doing research and analysis for these issues. We are working directly with folks on the Senate Finance Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, in the Trump administration, state officials across the country, to try to work to address these, because we see this not just as doing a paper or two, because there are innumerable issues like this. These are just some of the highest order issues that I've mentioned. And so we see that as the beginning of scaling up to doing additional analyses, including state-specific ones, to enact additional protections against things like retroactive taxation, which is a threat that is unfortunately likely to emerge as states face these budget problems. And so the way that we define success in this is, ultimately, I'd like to see federal legislation that comprehensively delays some of these deadlines, including time-limited accounts, to allow people sufficient time, and particularly federal legislation to essentially to freeze quote-unquote tax nexus in place for the period of the crisis, to treat telework as though it's in-office work, to make sure that people aren't being hit with new paperwork and filing burdens in the wake of this crisis. So thanks to Donors Trust and to others for helping to underwrite that work, because it's going to be incredibly important for taxpayers in the coming months.
Thank you, Andrew, for that update on what you're doing there at the National Taxpayers Union. My name is Kent Lassman. I'm the president of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's an organization that's familiar to many of you. It is an organization devoted to reshaping the relationship between citizens and the regulatory state. This means our focus is on the rule of law and a devotion to market solutions. And in the last month, we've really jumped to try to meet the moment, this extraordinary moment that we're all living through. And certainly part of that is the pandemic and the public health response. But what I'm talking about is how it is the first time in memory when people of all walks of life are coming face to face, and they are living the trade-offs of regulatory decisions. The delay in testing and public information was perhaps the tip of the iceberg. There were confused roles and authority. There was bureaucratic overlap and a great deal of unnecessary friction from the government that prevented the development and deployment of widespread testing for COVID. Now, we've coalesced our contributions to the debate under the banner of a hashtag, never needed. It was simply the first phase, and we were cataloging and bringing more awareness to the scores of regulations that have either been relaxed, suspended, or repealed. Now, these regulations and these obligations, they are federal, they're state, and they're local. We've seen a similar phenomenon from friends abroad, and we've been collaborating in particular with folks in Europe. These regulations have tended toward health services, education, childcare and transportation, which is a critical link in supply chains. But they've also cropped up in agriculture, labor and employment law, and manufacturing processes. They've come from the suspensions and the eliminations have come from politicians and regulators of all political stripes. And that is something that we are encouraging and trying to make easier for them to take up. The hallmarks of the issue campaign for CEI are probably familiar to you. They are the attributes of how we operate normally, but they have become essential to the current policy environment. And that means we're focused on getting other people and other organizations to the table, which is giving them resources and information so that they can apply their own local knowledge to the local policy situation to the question of never needed regulations. It certainly means we're working closely with organizations in the Constellation of Liberty that you're familiar with, but we're also talking to new allies and bringing new people to the table. Our core audience has been and remains the policymakers and their staff who are struggling to respond. And we are driving three goals. First, we want to fix the policy that stands in the way of an effective response. Second, we're addressing policy that stands in the way of an economic recovery. And third, we want to eliminate the barriers that stand in the way of creating a more resilient society. And the primary objective there is to address not just the targeted issue by issue regulatory opportunities that exist, but the structure of how we regulate, how we evaluate regulation, and importantly, what we can do at this time and in the coming months to repeal large swaths of the regulatory state. Our work at CEI is primarily through research and public education efforts, as well as a lot of behind the scenes elbow grease applied to the handholding and the people that are working the policy apparatus. I want to close here with a special note of thanks for the involvement that you have with Donors Trust. It's very impressive to see them jumping into the breach, and especially for your generous grant to CEI to get this program up and running.
Well, thank you, everybody. We have a couple of questions that have been asked. I gather some people also didn't hear the first part about the fund. When we're done with some of the questions, I'll repeat all of that. Dan, let me ask you just a question about the scalability. Do you envision more high school teachers being part of where you're going with this just because of the opportunity, or has that been part of the plan all along?
That had always been kind of a secondary concern, but we see that as part of the biggest opportunity going forward. Right now, there are about 11.6 million students who have to take economics under state law. And we anticipate that number to grow pretty considerably. The reality is most high school economics is not taught particularly well. This is a real opportunity for us to build these new relationships that will help the teaching of economics come alive so that people get excited about markets and what they really are, not just the kind of boring macro that's typically taught.
Sure. Aaron, question for you. What have been the main obstacles for researchers to get antibodies for research? Interesting you mentioned that, and some of our listeners picked up on that.
So it's been challenging mainly that there has not been cross blood stick testing against various providers. So our provider is has been in business for 30 years, is the main DoD provider of antibody tests. So, like, you know, we have sort of isolated scientific analysis of the individual stick itself, but across different companies, we don't have that. As well as in there has been a flood of people to the market that have low quality sensitivity tests. However, it should be noted that the difference in effect, the sort of measurement between PCR, which is our current testing regime, versus antibody, antibody is better, but it's still both are pretty bad. So we're kind of a little bit, you know, comparing, as one physician told me, crap to crap. But the main thing has just been, there's been so many gone to the market. And the second thing is that there is a theory now coming out of the physicians that I've been working with that based upon your symptomatic response, the antibody levels will be sensitive to that. So if you are an asymptomatic person, as theorized, that you actually will have low antibody levels, which means you actually won't show up on the stick. So we're currently also battling that.
Got it. Andrew, a question came in about what you all think about an education FSA.
Well, it depends on how the question is asked, I suppose. I think that if the question is asked in terms of extending deadlines, the answer is yes. I mentioned just a few examples of what FSAs could be used for, but to the extent that those programs are expanded, that means more opportunities for taxpayers to use some sort of tax-advantaged product to be able to support various different efforts. And so I think that if that's done in a careful fashion and you balance the many concerns that go into that, that can make sense. But our focus in the here and now is thinking about the ways in which taxpayers are likely to be impacted by the COVID-19 crisis, and ways in which the federal government needs to take discrete action now just to prevent that harm, which is a slightly different thing thinking about expanding these things into the future.
Got it. So Rainer, it's getting close to midnight your time. So, you know, I can ask you, there's a lot of debate about, you know, who's going to open the economy. That's been a conversation we've certainly been hearing a lot here. But we've also heard commentators, people on this panel itself, sort of talk about the ultimate deciders are frankly consumers. We're the ones that are going to be making the decision. Are we comfortable enough to be going out? A lot of people are anxious to get out. There are those who probably are more fearful. Everybody runs the gamut. So have you all done some research on sort of along those lines as to how businesses can make customers comfortable enough that would get them out and engage in the daily give and take of money, et cetera, that gives them value?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the question, Lawson. We are also, besides the project that I spoke about earlier, we're also engaged in various research papers on the e-commerce, which obviously plays a large role, especially at the moment when nobody is allowed to go out. And so we're dealing with issues where the companies set examples and self-regulate when it comes to data protection, when it comes to, at the moment, restructuring loans in the fintech business, et cetera. So there are several good examples that the government needs to know so that they won't start over-regulating a business that grew at a time when it was rather unregulated. And now the policymakers are at them and try to actually regulate every part of it. So we are celebrating National Consumer Day here in Indonesia next Monday. Going to have a webinar on this where we invite business leaders, but also regulators to listen and to talk to each other. We are actually also having a data protection bill at the moment in Parliament debated. So we are giving our inputs and sharing. So don't overregulate an area that is crucially important when you want to restart the economy to be able to contribute what it can.
Sure. Well, we wanted to keep this at 30 minutes. Let me just make a couple of wrap-up comments. You know, as I've sort of said before, the Growth Resilience Project is intended to leverage the financial resources of a lot of donors who understand the value in fighting for free enterprise, government restraint, and the entrepreneurial spirit. We have raised $650,000 for the project. We are grateful for that. Our intention is to try to reach and exceed $1 million specifically for the Growth Resilience Project. And if you're interested in supporting that, there's information on our website about how you can contribute to that or just speak with me directly. This is a priority for us. And so Donors Trust is not collecting any fees on any contributions that are made into the project. But we also want to use it to spur additional support from other donors and foundations and interested parties, because honestly, we know this is a much larger effort than just us. So if you are currently or signed up to receive information about the project, we'll be sending you a comprehensive list of all of the proposals, whether they're funded or not. We have limited resources, as do many, and we believe there's value in spreading the knowledge broadly, because we know donors have diverse interests and goals, and some of the proposals that we've seen are going to resonate with them. And that's all part of that priming the pump effort that I mentioned. Just sort of that summary, some people hadn't heard the first couple of minutes of this. This is really a policy response, which we believe is actually part of the humanitarian response, is to get people back to work, try to repair the social and economic fabric that we're all experiencing. In 2 weeks, we're going to feature another webinar that will have another round of grantees. Based on the proposals that I have seen, and there are a lot of them, the focus of those will be very different than what you have heard today. But that again reflects the diversity of this larger effort. If you go to the Donors Trust website, there's a link to the project where more information can be found. And with that, thank you again, Dan Rothschild and Aaron Jin and Reiner Hoefhoefers and Andrew and Kent. Rainer, I'm glad you can get to bed, given the late, or at least have your glass of wine, as you indicated earlier. So all of you on this, thank you again for participating. Stay healthy, stay safe, and most importantly, please stay free. Thanks.